everyone. Thanks for joining us today, and welcome to another episode of Banking Matters. If you're a regular listener, then you're probably noticing a new face, but I am your new co-host, Laura Benson. I am so excited to have Clinton Gerst joining me today. Clinton is the president of Bank of Bozeman, a local independently owned community bank located in beautiful Bozeman, Montana. Clinton graduated magna cum laude from Texas A&M with a bachelor's degree in petroleum engineering and then went on to receive an MBA from Harvard Business School. So welcome, Clinton, to Banking Matters. I'm really looking forward to hearing your input and perspective. So I can't help but wonder how you went from engineering to banking. So why don't you tell our listeners a little about yourself and your experiences and how you got into banking?
Sure. Well, thanks. First, thanks for having me. I appreciate being your first host for your first time as now that you're the co-host of this program.
So yeah.
Thanks for the honor of being being selected, and I appreciate the opportunity. So, I loved engineering. I graduated from Texas A&M, went to work for Shell Oil Company. I enjoyed my time there, but a petroleum engineer is really impacted by oil prices. So if oil prices are high, you can get projects approved. There's a lot you can do. If oil prices are low, then you can't get your projects approved. You can't make them economic. And then also with the cycles, you see people, they hire a lot of people and they fire a lot of people. And so I was interested in getting on the deal side of the business. And I talked to my boss, who was a great supporter and really enjoyed working with him. And he said that, that you really need to get an MBA to get on the deal side. They're not going to just hire an engineer. You need no accounting. You need no business. Yeah. And he said, you should apply to Harvard, you know. And at that point, I mean, I had been out of Texas. I had been to Oklahoma because we, as a family, we would go to Lake Texoma. But I haven't done a lot of traveling. I certainly haven't lived outside the state. My parents were born, I was born and raised in Dallas. And so, but he encouraged me to do it, you know. And I said, well, I mean, what's the loss? And he said, I'll write you a great recommendation, you know. And so he did. And then Joe Clegg, who was a great man in the industry I had worked with on some projects, he wrote a recommendation. I had a professor recommendation. I got in. So that was great. And I got married, moved up there. And in school, I was exposed to, you know, people from all kinds of different backgrounds. And the banking seemed interesting, and I could do work on deals and get exposed to it more. I mean, the financial sector can be volatile too, right? But it's sure. A little, you know, it's always needed at some capacity. So I thought it was a little more stable industry, and I wouldn't be just focused on one commodity price. So I went to work in New York for Citibank. And I was with Citibank for 24 years. So I spent, you know, started my career in New York, which is kind of a rite of passage in banking. I mean, not everybody has to do it, but I just felt like, well, I might as well do the New York thing. And
it's not very often that you see someone go from New York banking to community banking.
Well, right. So that was a big transition. So I ran Citibank's Calgary office and got my managing director promotion there. And then I went to Houston post Enron to deal with some of the problem clients there. And I got my senior credit initial. And I was enjoying my Citibank career, and I was in Houston several different jobs. But then after the kids graduated from high school and we had the fourth hurricane, my wife said, do we have to live in Houston? You know, is this the only place we could live? And I had on my list to, you know, maybe run a community bank in the mountains kind of thing. And, you know, you make these lists of these bucket lists, you know, well, is this realistic or whatever? But I went ahead and put my name in and Bank of Bozeman came through. So I've been here 9 years.
Yeah, that's amazing. And I was actually working at Bank of Bozeman when you started as the president and took over back in 2015. That's back when I was working in credit administration and I was pregnant with my daughter Brinley, who's now almost nine.
Yep, no, time flies. And we were sorry you left us, but it is great to see someone's career you know, blossom like yours. So it's a, while we were sad to see you leave, it's great to see, you know, all that you've been able to do.
Yeah. Well, have you guys been having a great summer?
Yeah. The summer's good. I think, you know, family wise, we're all doing well. Our daughter is in real estate investing and she, is living in California. She's married and, you know, is living the California lifestyle. And then our son actually graduated from MSU, Montana State University, and is here in Bozeman working for the city finance department.
Oh, great. Good for him. So he wanted to get into finance as well.
He did in a way. He kind of fell into it, but he's, you know, he's doing it. I don't know if it's his first love, but he's trying it out.
Oh, good, good. Yeah, we've had a really good summer too. I think we're all ready for school to start next week though. My daughter's going into third grade, Blake's going into first grade. So I'm not quite at that school age yet where we're like heavy into sports and I'm driving around all over the place, but I know it's coming. So I'm just going to enjoy the calm before the storm, before all that hits.
Yeah, I remember a commercial where it's like, it has that Christmas tune. It's the most wonderful time of the year, but it's parents sending their kids off to school because it's a nice break, you know, especially with you trying to manage, you know, a dynamic growing career and being a mother and a wife. I mean, it's a lot, right? And so it's nice when you can put on their backpacks and say, put them on the bus, you know, it's you need a break.
Just add working from home with kids home for the summer to that list. And it just got a little crazy, but you know, we made it.
I'm sure you did.
So Clinton, with such a colorful professional history, I'm sure you've spent a lot of time learning how to navigate market risk. Do you have a crystal ball or what, and how do you make educated predictions for rate changes, interest rate risks, and market risk?
Yeah, no, good question. You know, there's tons of opinions out there, right? And there's so many sources and economists and, you know, there's so many ways to get information. It's like we're deluged with it. And so part of the challenge is trying to cut out the noise. And what we do at the bank and what I've done is I try to go where the people are putting their money where their mouth is. Is it, you know, talk can be cheap. Who is actually making serious interest rate bets? And so the place I look is in the futures market, where, you know, it's liquid. People are buying and selling these interest rate contracts, and they're, you know, portfolio managers are hedging large bond portfolios. And so it really reflects a consensus of rates. And so when you look at, you know, when you look at the futures and you look at the prices, it's hard to then decipher, okay, you know, to go from that to, well, what is the Fed going to do next month, right? And but there, and there's a lot of calculations. And once as an analyst, I had to do it by hand. It's really, it's tedious. It's statistics, you know, because you look at all the different tranches of futures and then you look at the probabilities on it. So fortunately, the Chicago Mercantile Exchange has a website that actually does it for you. And you can send it to your listeners if they're interested, or put it on the podcast thing or whatever. And that's where I go because it gives me the probabilities of a Fed rate change and the magnitude for each Fed meeting for the next year. So we can use that tool to really help gauge what the market's saying. And it changes every day, just like stock prices changes every day. The market consensus is evolving, right? So it's not, but it tends not to go crazy, but it does move around based on new information. So I pulled it for this morning if you're interested in what September looks like, because we've had a very stable Fed for a long time, right? The Fed raised rates faster than they had in 40 years when inflation really hit. And so they really clamped down on it. It was very tough on banks, as you know, to have that rapid of a rise that was unexpected. And then they've been stable all this time. And then, of course, now it's been, well, when is it going to happen, right? And people are saying September. Well, what does the market say? Well, the market says that there is a 73% chance that we have a quarter point cut and a 50% or a 26.5% chance that we have a 50 basis point cut. So that's the consensus. And so we're going to use that kind of information in discussing our, you know, rate strategy.
That's really interesting too, because like you said, it's been so stagnant for a long time after they did all those hikes, and then it just kind of sat there. And then it was like rumors every single time that they would meet. Oh, I think it's going to go down. I think it's going to go down this month, this month, this month. And they've been saying that pretty much all year. So what do you think is a little bit different about, you know, this 75%? Because that seems a lot more than 50-50 like it had been kind of previously. So what do you think the change from that comes from?
Well, I think it really reflects people, you know, reading the tea leaves and listening to the economic data and seeing the inflation come down and seeing the jobs numbers. And it really incorporates, you know, just like any kind of market, right? It incorporates a consensus view. And the people who are voting are educated. So, you know, I guess you have a few idiots that play in the futures market, but generally most of the people are pretty smart and they're taking in all this information. They're making real money decisions. So I think that just represents a better source than, you know, some of the noise we see out there. There's good articles and there's good, you know, pontification, but, economists use data that's historical, right? I mean, we're always, a lot of our models, you know, when we think about what we do in trying to predict things, we look at the past, we try to learn from it, and they use data from the past. But the futures market, you know, it's really focused on the future, as the name would suggest, and it forces people to make a prediction. And so the Fed, you know, they scrutinize the Fed message and what's in there. You know, some of that goes over the top, but well, I like this tool simply because it gives me probabilities. I mean, there is no certainty in life, right? But it is interesting that the probability of them staying the same in September is close to zero, which is interesting. Usually don't see that. Usually there's a little bit there. I mean, there's some contrarians and stuff, but in this case, the market, it would be shocked if the Fed doesn't do anything. And the Fed looks at this too, right? So they know, okay, if they don't do anything in September, there's going to be a market reaction because the market's predicting they're going to act. So they know what the market's saying too, which is, you know, so it kind of creates a feedback loop with the Fed as well.
Yeah. And so you take this information, okay, and you're going to use that in your decision making. You're going to use that for how you're going to set your rates within your bank. How else do you use that to stay competitive in a market, being that you are a community bank?
Well, you know, interest rates is kind of core to, is one of the principal things we have to manage both on the loan side and on the deposit side. So, for example, we're going to be discussing CD rates. I don't want to be late to the party in lowering that because we have to match the reduction in the cost of funds with the reduction in our loan rates. Because when the Fed moves, it affects, you know, deposit rates, but it affects loan rates too, right? So we, and some of those variable rate loans reprice like that month, right? Depending on how we structured the deal with the customer. Sometimes it reprices quarterly. You know, there's various mechanisms that depend on the loan terms that we've agreed to. But what we try to do as a bank, ideally, is we try to stay interest rate neutral, which is tough. But we don't use this information to speculate on interest rates and make money because we know what interest rates are going to do. We do use this information to balance our change in loan pricing with our change in deposit pricing to keep our margins relatively constant, which is tough. We try to stay relatively neutral on whether rates are going up or down. We just want to maintain that margin. And so when rates are up, deposit customers make more money, loan customers have to pay a little bit more. And then when rates go down, loan customers get a decrease, but deposit customers see a decrease. And we're just trying to hold the line on the margin because that's what, you know, gets people paid and keeps the lights on.
Right. And so for so many years when everything was sitting the same, you know, some banks weren't always stress testing their lending side of the house whenever they were giving variable rate loans. So I've noticed that it's kind of starting to come back. You know, you come in for a HELOC, yeah, your rate might be this, but if it's changing monthly, are you still going to be able to afford that payment if your rate goes from 3% to 9% or 10% or anything higher than that? So have you seen just in the general area, like lending decrease just because of the rates, or people, you know, kind of struggling to kind of come back with some of those variable rate products and how that affects them and with their.
It's a real issue because for, you know, like home buying, for example, right? We see a combination of factors. People, you know, are struggling to try to meet because of, as you know, Bozeman prices have gone up, and it is a bigger chunk out of their monthly paycheck to pay the higher rates, which is supposed to then slow the economy, right, and reduce inflation. So that's why we have higher rates. But loan demand has come down, and we see people waiting. Those that can wait, they're saying, well, rates are going to come down, so I'm going to wait to do that loan later if they can, right? And then, you know, deposit customers are saying, gosh, should I lock in this CD now to make sure I get the higher rates before you reduce them? Right. It's an interesting balance of that. But the higher rates do slow economic activity, no doubt about it. We see that for businesses, individuals. I mean, it does tend to take the heat off the economy, which is the point, right? Which is what the Fed was trying to do in raising rates so quickly, is to slow the economy a bit and reduce inflation.
Mm-hmm. And there's always a sense of uncertainty in an election year and how the results will impact the economy. Did you see the OCC recently published their semi-annual risk perspective, which basically says that we're entering into a maturing economic cycle? So this is going to cause a lot of difficulties for consumers. So just what are your thoughts on that and areas of risk that are most critical to a community bank?
Yeah, no, I did see the report, and I think it's a good report. I appreciate the OCC doing reports like that. And I think community banks generally are well positioned to deal with a slowing economy and dealing with customers that have issues. I mean, those of us who have seen several economic cycles have worked with customers closely. You know, we pride ourselves on being a relationship bank, being personally involved. And so we can help someone work through some challenges that their business starts to slow down a bit and they still have some higher rates. Although if the economy slows a lot, you'll see rates come down, right? So it's a maturing cycle, but then some of that interest cost is reduced, right? Because if we have a recession, which of course, right now, it's still possible we could avoid it, right? I mean, we've been slowing down. It's hard to do, but the Fed may pull it off this time. I don't know. But when you have a recession, typically, you know, rates drop because the Fed then will go into more of a stimulus kind of pattern rather than a tightening pattern to try to balance inflation and unemployment. So we haven't seen unemployment really take off. You know, it's obviously there's been some concerning signs on the jobs report. And you've seen the market gyrate on that. But, you know, a bank really is a classic economic barometer. And what we try to do to prepare ourselves in a variety of ways is to be well capitalized, you know, one, so you can deal with those cycles. And we try to look at tools that are predictive rather than just looking at the historical data. So, for example, for Bozeman, one of the things we look at is housing permits, because you can go around town and look at construction, right, and say, well, there's a lot of economic activity. That's true. But for the people who are developers, are they permitting projects? Because that gives you a 2-year, 3-year lead into what is coming. You know, what do they think the economy is doing, right? And they're putting real money at risk. And again, that goes back to my point of that, you know, to me, the folks that put their money where their mouth is who I tend to listen to. So, you know, look at permitting. And permitting in Bozeman has been still pretty strong. So, but I think everybody in their communities, because, you know, as things slow down, it's not even, right? Certain parts of the country will slow down more than Bozeman, or we could be later than others, right? There's timing issues and such. So each one of your listeners should look at their individual community, right? And say, okay, in my community, where we, you know, where our customers are, what's happening with, you know, like housing permits, you know, what's happening with the other thing you mentioned, HELOCs, variable rate loans and such. We look at that, not only for a rate issue, but is it being used? Because what happens generally is when times get tighter, people start borrowing to make ends meet, right? So let's say you have a HELOC, it's, you know, 25% drawn, and you've been paying it down, and then all of a sudden it's even, and then all of a sudden it's creeping back up, but you're not working on a project. It's not like, oh, you're doing a home renovation. No, it's just you are dealing with making ends meet. Then that's a sign that economic conditions are tightening. So we look at how much of our HELOCs are undrawn. And then if they are drawn, why are they drawn? Because the reasons they're drawn, you know, vary a lot, right? And a construction project is one thing, making the monthly bills is another.
Yeah, that's very, very true. Wow, that's great information. Thank you. Well, Clinton, you are just a wealth of knowledge. I feel like I could just sit here and talk with you all day.
But, well, I, you know, I certainly enjoy talking to you, and I'm glad that you know, compliance is tough. I mean, and the kind of work, it seems like that's a growing industry because the government seems to continue to shape up new rules that we have to deal with, and community banks have been, you know, like other, you know, regulated institutions have been having to deal with it. And so we need experts like you to keep us out of trouble.
Yeah, it's definitely not getting any easier. We'll put it that way. Well, Clinton, thank you so much for joining us today. What a great conversation, and very timely too. I know we get a lot of questions, especially recently, just around economic headwinds and interest rates. So it's definitely a topic that's fitting and on people's mind right now.
Good. Well, I hope that's helpful, and always happy to chat with you again.
Yeah. Well, you've already given us so much fabulous insight into interest rates and how to navigate and adapt to changes. But we always like to ask our guests, what is one piece of advice that you would like to leave with our listeners today?
Well, I would say you've got to be flexible and open-minded. And even though I'm an old fart, I always learn new things. And so I think there was a show where the guy was quoting Walt Whitman, and he was saying, you know, be curious, not judgmental. And that we need to approach things with curiosity and intrigue, because the world is a fascinating place. And like you say, we've got this election. This election's crazy. We've got two wars happening in the world. There's a lot of things that can kind of get you down. And then there's a lot of bright spots that are exciting in what people are doing and the innovation, the creativity, and how people overcome obstacles and all that. And all this is happening in real time for, you know, billions of people around the globe. And it's a fascinating time, I think, to be alive. And there's certainly a lot of new frontiers being broken. And, you know, AI has been in the news recently for its potential, and you know, you've seen like NVIDIA stock go through the roof because of the potential of the technology. And we at the bank actually have started to incorporate some of that technology for fraud prevention. You know, we're not ready to use it offensively yet. We've said, okay, let's try it defensively. Let's see if it can help us spot unusual transactions, any kind of weird behavior, because we can't look at everything humanly all the time. I mean, you know, and so, but a computer can look at everything and see patterns that look weird. And so, so I think there's a lot of interesting developments in our industry, in our country. And I think we should just approach life as to be curious and do the best job we can to do good.
Oh, great advice. Thank you, Clinton. We appreciate having you on today. For those of you listening, we really just scratched the surface. So if this was a topic that has been on your mind recently and you're looking at how to tackle some of these issues, Compliance Alliance has an economic headwinds toolkit that is a great resource. It addresses areas such as liquidity risk, market and interest rate risk, investment strategies, and more. I've included a link to this toolkit in the description box for your convenience. Also, you out there listening, we are always looking for new guests on the podcast. So if you are interested in being a guest, please reach out to us at info@compliancealliance.com, and one of our hosts will reach out to you to line something up. Clinton, again, thank you so much for joining us today. And that's Banking Matters.
Well, thank you. Good to be here.